Hey, you!
Huh?
This man is no longer a prisoner. Take off his pain bracelet.
I'm not sure if,
We have performed our duties for the Great Society of Esmeralda to Pan Zooks' satisfaction. Do you want to risk crossing him?
No. Here you are, sir.
The guard lifted a small device and pointed it at Rock's wrist.
Thanks, buddy.
Well, you better not be—
Hey, we need everybody at 17th and Harper now! We've got a major situation brewing.
Roger that! I've got
it! You go! Thanks! All right, now let's go. To the spaceport.
What do you think the situation is?
I don't know. Here, let's see if the scanner says anything.
Attention all units! Attention all units! We need everybody to convene at 17th and Harper immediately to contain a fledgling rebellion. Kitra Brewmark has broken free with the help of rebels influenced by anti-philosophy of the Earthman Niles Rockman.
Whoa, I had no idea I was so influential.
Yes, you tend to do that when you're in your own dream.
The car automatically braked as a mob ran across their path. Off to the side, a light pole vanished, and a building rocked and faded away into nothingness.
This asteroid is fading away.
Something's happening to the machine. The dream itself is fading.
Once the crowd passed, they roared on toward the spaceport.
Roxanne, we're free!
Rock was
free.
Immediately crowded
you
by a solid
it.
Wall
we're
of glee.
We're going to be free! We're going to stop all this madness! Thanks to your example!
No, it's not me, please! Just let me get by.
But you've done so much! We need to celebrate with you!
No, you don't understand if I don't get—
We're gonna have a true freedom party! Here at Esmeralda and—
I am not fucking around! Let us through to that rocket right here, or I swear I will shoot every one of you!
But...
Now!
The crowd started to part.
All right, let's go.
Rock?
You're fading.
It's okay, Rock. I know I'm just a dream here. It's okay.
She was gone. With a lump in his throat and adrenaline in his heart, he turned and started climbing up into the Planetary Patrol high-boost single-seater fighter rocket. He slammed the airlock and pressed the emergency boost button. The twin-seat rocket took off in the emergency takeoff mode, with all engines firing. Almost immediately, Roxanne was crushed back into the brown leatherette cushioning. As the super-powerful rocket ship kept rising from the surface, the weight of his body quadrupled, and then quadrupled again. Rock was soon near to blacking out, almost unable to draw a breath. His vision narrowed, reddened.
I have to do it!
Stealing his mighty legs, he gave it one more try, attempting this time to drop-kick the control lever. Suddenly, there was total silence. Total lack of the teeth-grinding vibration. Rock hadn't strapped in, and now, when he craned his neck up to see the array of dials, he floated weightless off the couch. He breathed easily, moved freely. He twisted in the air like a trapeze artist. He felt positively giddy due to the lack of oxygen all those minutes he had been accelerating. He checked the dials, hoping to find some indication of his course. He hoped it was far enough away that the machine hadn't programmed it. But when he twisted in midair and started back towards the seat, he was shocked. The seat was gone. In its place...
It's me!
He saw his own body lying prone in the metallic chamber. His gaunt, dead face was staring up at him through the ugly metallic capsule's faceplate, his eyes open and staring in death, his mouth frozen in the last breath. Then he saw the boulder that had fallen and smashed the what? The dream machine. He was inside something called the dream machine, and the machine was not in a spacecraft, but rather in some sort of huge, dark cave. His pounding heart slowed to a mere marathon race rate. He spun his arm so that his floating body twisted about, drawing his horrified eyes up and away from his own dead, frozen stare. The ghost Roxanne looked around. It was a dark, huge cave, lit by a few emergency lights. Under him was a stone tile floor, scattered with broken pieces of equipment, some bloodstains, and other bodies of small men in red tunics, some holding sharp aluminum-looking cylinders in their decaying hands.
I'm not dead yet.
He loomed over the capsule, holding down sheer terror. He looked inside the faceplate. Roxanne inside was not dead. He was breathing with difficulty. He looked emaciated, near death. The capsule was dented, cracked at chest level. A large rock must have fallen from the cavern ceiling and smashed it, damaged it. Somehow, Roxanne knew that these capsules had life support systems, and that this one's system had been damaged by the falling rocks that now littered the floor near the capsule. That's what had happened to the dream. It had started to shut down as the power slowly drained.
What do I do?
He suddenly realized that there were two other people in the cave with him, leaning over his body. It was Archer and Zydeco, the techno survivor. Their faces were tense with shock, and they didn't seem to be moving. The whole scene was a frozen tableau with Rock's ethereal spirit watching over. He was looking down on his own dream. The mountain man was struggling to lift the cover of the machine, while a metal cover from the machine had been torn open below Zydeco. Rock looked down on himself. The tableau started to move, though slowly.
You done did it! Quickly, get him out of there!
He watched as Archer lifted his own body up in his arms. It was light, like a thin and dry rag doll, but it was still warm and breathing shallowly. Archer carried Rock's nearly dead body over to a table and placed him on top.
What now?
We need to examine him for injuries. Open his shirt.
Archer ripped apart Rock's tunic, revealing his bare and bloody chest. The man's ribs, his ribs, were actually caved in. His ribs were broken. Bloody ribbons, not bones.
Oh, no.
I'm gonna prepare for surgery. Just keep him breathing.
Rock, don't die.
Rock watched the surreal tableau. The crushed ribs floated along the membranes of his chest, their shape lost, their protection destroyed.
Rock, you're okay.
It was as if, yes, he was actually getting thinner, paler. He realized that he was fading away. He was becoming some sort of spiral in the air, a spiral of pure energy, life energy. The man on the table breathed more easily, each breath stronger than the last. With the man Roxanne's every breath drawing in life energy, the ghost Roxanne was losing his being. The ghost Roxanne was being dragged into that now breathing blue-white body, into pain. He was spinning, turning on a shiny silver cord, like bathwater going down a drain. He was slowly but surely being sucked into that body.
Zydeco! Help!
Other hands, small, cold hands, touched and probed him.
He's in very bad shape. We have to perform surgery immediately. Get him lots of whole blood. There's surgical equipment in the back of the cave. Get the gas! I'll perform the operation myself. Here, Archer, while I get this stuff, shoot this into his arm.
And with those words, he felt the prick in his arm. The pain eased. Roxanne felt only a dark, pleasant oblivion.
Archer.
Yeah?
I've done all I can. He's still breathing, but I'm not sure I took care of all the internal damage. These mutant types heal well, and a normal man would have died from those wounds. So I think he's gonna live. But I'm worried about his brain. All that oxygen deprivation. I don't know if he'll ever come out of his coma.
But he's alive.
Yeah, he is. We could bring him back to Century City, but brain damage. He was without oxygen for so long, it might not be irreversible.
No, I not believe that. I can't believe that.
Archer, what's wrong?
Archer's hat flew off, and as the techno survivor backed away, Archer started to grab at his own hair. There was a blue light shining from out of his head. As he watched in awe, Archer's crystal-implanted skull glowed. Each of the multifaceted crystals embedded in his head started glowing.
What the hell? Archer, you all right?
Shh. I'm getting a message through my crystals. The implanted crystals in my head have been quiet for years.
Message?
From the glowers. Now please, be quiet.
Archer's veins pulsed, and he nodded once in a while. Finally, the light in the crystals in his head died out.
What happened?
The glowers gave me instructions to take Roxanne someplace much closer than Century City. They say that they will try to revive him. 331 miles. Give me a map before I forget. My brain hurts. I don't like talking so fast.
Yeah, map. Here.
Here!
There, all right. I'll set up the stretcher.
Quickly, Zydeco arranged the stretcher to carry Roxxon out. They carried him through the hole they had blasted in the rock and placed him in the armored personnel carrier that they had stolen from Zhabnov's encampment.
Iskar, Drill, and I will take care of Rock. You drive.
The convoy of stolen APCs rolled up to the spot on the map. The remaining techno survivors were in the other vehicles.
Ah, damn. Is this the right place?
Yeah, Glow is here.
Could we have gotten the directions wrong?
No, I tell right.
Let me see those binoculars. Maybe we're just a little off. There's a hill a couple of miles from here. Their camp might be there. Wait. There, over there, there's three things.
Ships?
Yeah, ships. Three ships. God, they look like old pirate galleons. Masts and sails and, oh, they're coming fast. Must be 60 miles an hour. God, they're not on wheels. The three galleons are floating over the surface of the sands.
The strange ships weren't the half of it. Huge, blue, glowing creatures manned the great sails ropes, steering the crafts with giant ship's wheels, too.
Monsters!
Monsters! Everybody take out your weapons!
No monsters! Friends! Friends! The glowers!
The ships slid alongside them as Archer and the techno survivors stood in a line of greeting. A creature glowing a brilliant blue leaned over one of the ships.
Archer and the eight closest to him. Climb up the nets we throw down. Get on board. We'll send a sling down for the stretcher. Do not touch us or you will surely die. The rest of you will return to repair your home.
The big mountain man carried the stretcher containing Roxxon over and put it in the lift. Once it was moving up, they all clambered up the soft, warm, plastic-like nets. The deck was awash with flickering blue energy. Everyone's hair stood on end. Up close now, the techno-survivors were terrified. The things that had invited them on board stood in a phalanx, staring at them with saucer-shaped green-yellow eyes. Zydeco and the other techno-men huddled behind the massive frame of Archer.
Goddamn, you didn't say the glories looked like this. Are they human?
We look so strange because our organs are outside our skins, held by cartilage. We are held together by energies of the mind. Think of your own bodies turned inside out. You would look much like we do. Except, of course, you would die that way. But yes, we are of human origin. Introducing your members is not necessary. We scan your minds. I am the Turquoise Spectrum. We have met before, Archer. Do you remember?
Yeah.
We called you to the nearest place our ships would be able to sail. Our village is many miles distant, far out in the desert. We will reach it in a matter of 3.5 of your hours. Roxxon will not die if we reach the medicine in time.
Why didn't you done bring it?
The medicine is the place, not some drink. Only the great energy of the area we live in and its ancient medicine wheel can effect a cure.
Even as he spoke in their minds, the great ships turned into the wind. Their sails shifted position under the guidance of the strange inside-out beings that handled the guide ropes. The sails caught the wind, or the sunlight, and the ship slowly started to move in the direction from which it had come.
Why are there three ships?
Those are gunships. They carry weapons undreamt of even in your wildest imaginings. There are things in the desert between here and where we inhabit. The escort ships keep us safe from intruders. Interdimensional beings let into this world's time-space by the power of nuclear blasts long ago. These things do not respond to regular defenses. You will see.
About an hour into the trip, Turquoise seemed to stiffen.
They are coming.
What?
Shh. Watch.
As Zydeco, Archer, and the others watched in awe, the two gunships moved ahead of their hospital ship, where Roxxon still floated over the deck in medical stasis. The desert wavered and flickered, as if it were bending, as if reality itself were bending. Then a thing, glowing like the glowers, only a sickly green, jutted out of the sand and tried to take a bite out of the prow of the first gunship. The thing had three rows of teeth and must have been 50 feet wide. There was no way to tell how long the thing was. As they all shrank back in horror, expecting the gunship to be devoured, the two warships slowed and seemed to vibrate. The scales and skin of the beast rippled along with the atmospheric disturbance, leaving behind pulsing green veins and organs that served no visible purpose.
The weapons are linked to their own harmonic spectrum and are firing in both ours and their dimensions at once. When you see one pulse out, it is merely traveling to their universe. Whatever's hit, it locked directly into our own reality.
A beam hit half of one of the creatures right as it phased along. Only half of it phased. The rest just fell and turned to sand. The other half soon joined it. The gunships continued the battle against the worms. Archer, Zydeco, and the other techno survivors watched in horror, their hair standing on end. This jagged nightmare of constant weapons, sounds, pulsing screams, and rattles. The hospital ship tossed so much from side to side that they had all they could do to hold on. Archer could feel his stomach beginning to heave. Then suddenly, it was over. The last of the attacking worms had been hit and faded out from this reality. There were no glower or human casualties. All that was left was total silence and the distinct smell of ozone burning their nostrils.
The danger is over, for now.
When they reached the area between the dozen geodesic domes, blue lit from inside. The sand ships slowed, and many glowers came running out with huge poles. The poles, Archer knew, would steady the ships, so they would not lean over on their sides. For once the sails went down, the ships were no longer capable of floating. When the poles were in place and their great sail ship creaked down into their cradling arms, they all climbed down the ropes, and then the glowers lowered the cocoon that contained their desperately sick friend, Roxxon.
Bring him to the largest of the domes. I must prepare for what we are about to do.
As they were led inside the dome, they were surprised to see just how large the interior was. It didn't seem possible, but it was definitely larger than it was on the outside.
I am Violet. Please remember that to touch us is to invite death. Please put Roxxon in the center of the dome. Thank you. Now, everybody, please, sit on the small rocks on the sides of the circle.
Turquoise and four other glowers, as they came into the lodge, each picked up a circular shield about 2 feet wide. As they too sat, they placed the small, intricately decorated shields before them, so their bodies were mostly covered by them.
Each shield pattern shows the accomplishments of our being, where we are on the path to completion.
Turquoise sent Archer a burst of symbols. Archer grasped, someplace deep inside him, a pure understanding. An understanding that each person is a wheel, as the universe is a wheel. An understanding that we are born with only one part of the great wheel's nature. Male or female, active or passive, yang or yin. We are incomplete. In order to be whole, to pass on to a higher plane of existence, to progress toward its ultimate destiny, union and completion in the universe, a being must travel around that wheel, integrating all the energies of the mind and body. Never had he had such a profound thought.
Oh, head hurts.
We have been on this land a long time, and have come to feel related to the Indians who once lived on this land. Their spirits, their most powerful medicine men, still roam here. We have integrated those spirits into ours, and have learned much.
Yeah, well, that's all well and good, but how can this discussion help our gravely ill friend, who, as we discuss these abstracting, breathes with great labor? Can you not do something?
We have already analyzed the problem. There is no physical medicine that can cure him, or it would have already been done. Roxxon has been removed from this reality. His dream was so real to him that Roxxon is not really here. His cells themselves are tied to another universe that collapsed when the dream machine broke, and he is no more.
Wait, Then there's no hope? Are we gonna just sit here and talk philosophy and watch him die?
No. We will do the medicine wheel practice of reintegration. With the cycle of the great medicine wheel, there is a change. You all must participate. If it were just Roxanne and we glowers, we could not relate to him enough. Archer, especially, is tuned to the way Roxanne used to be. And you seven small men, you techno-survivors, have great mind power, though your bodies are frail. In order to reintegrate Roxanne, if it can be done, all of us combined must do the medicine wheel ritual. Try to bring him into focus in this universe. I sense your impatience, humans. You fear for the life of your dying friend, and that is good. But we must become whole so that we can give Roxanne that wholeness. He will be the recipient of that wholeness, and thus, perhaps, restored. The greatest secret of the Indians was the medicine wheel. But it was an open secret. There were 6 million medicine wheels in the Americas. Settlers found them everywhere, from Maine to California. Remnants exist today, but mostly in the deserts. For in every western forest, in every western plain and prairie land, there were such circles. They are aligned to the bright stars, so the whites thought the wheels had something to do with calendars, or crop planting, or astronomy. That is true, but it is not the heart of the Indian way. That the whites did not understand. It is the way of completion, the rounding of the circle. Every person is born with certain powers. This power is the beginning of the wheel. Now, let us begin.
Aside from Roxanne, there were 12 in all. Archer, 7 techno-survivors, and 4 glowers. They sat in a wide circle, each on a whitewashed medicine rock.
The Indians that were here before the Europeans had millions of these circles in North America. They recognized that a healing, a re-entering of the circle of nature, of the universe, was vital to health and sanity. So they gathered at certain times of the year to share wholeness. The men of today, the technical, logical men and women of today, have forgotten this need to interconnect. They have surrendered wholeness to material power. But we have relearned the power way of the original Americans. We glowers teach you now as the Indians once taught their children. There are 4 great directional powers in the world, and thus, in this medicine wheel, to the north where I sit is wisdom. Wisdom's color is white, like snow. And the medicine animal of the north is the elk. But wisdom needs other things. Compassion, otherness, to be complete. In the south of the great circle of life, where Archer sits, is the power of innocence and devotion to others. The heart nature. The color is green, and its animal is the mouse. To the east is the eagle. He can see keenly and is cruelly aware. That is science today, and medicine of the technical nature. Its color is golden brown. The west is the wolf, which gathers all the information it needs for the brood to survive. The man of the west, such as Roxanne, looks inward and outward, but is always the leader of the pack. Its color is red. These are the 4 basic symbols. The in-between directions are represented by the animals called bear, buffalo, hawk, pheasant, otter, beaver, squirrel, deer. They are the little brothers of the primary animals. The shields also have black arrows pointing toward the center or outward. Inward-pointing arrows denote introspection. Outward-pointing arrows denote panoramic awareness. Thus, when we see a being's shield, we know his starting point on the great wheel.
Turquoise Spectrum made a sweeping gesture with his right hand and materialized a rawhide shield in front of each of the humans sitting with him. And all of them were amazed.
Look at your symbols now and learn about yourselves.
Archer quickly turned his shield. The huge mountain man expected an elk or something big and strong. He was disappointed. Archer's shield was rather humbling for a big man. It contained a small and very plain green mouse, which was surrounded by tiny arrows pointing inward. Archer shifted uncomfortably. He wanted to have the elk. He wanted to be large, not small. He would be intelligent, sharp. And instantly, he realized he could be those things, if he could do as Turquoise instructed. So Archer got very serious. Surgeon Escadrille turned his shield and bent his head to see that his shield contained the golden brown hawk, brother animal to the eagle of the east. Hawks could see both at a distance and closely. His black arrows pointed outward, thus symbolizing his strength of panoramic awareness, most suitable for a scientist or doctor. The hawk, he intuited, symbolized the power of intelligence a doctor needs. He looked around, catching glimpses of other shields, knowing the nature of the others, knowing what he lacked. And he wanted to be complete. Zydeco studied his own shield and the shields of all the other techno survivors. Except for the surgeons, they all were identical. Zydeco had in common with his friends the golden brown eagle of the east, the exact opposite of Archer. Eagle people had panoramic awareness, but would never feel close to things, to be touched by the heart. Zydeco's shield had arrows pointing outward at the borders, indicating perhaps a potential for great achievement. He had to admit that the symbols were good summaries of psychological, philosophical dispositions, at least in the strange glower terminology. But how a symbol could help cure someone? Well, he was much more than skeptical. Still, he kept an open mind. The glowers were amazing beings.
We beings are very disparate in strengths and weaknesses. We have different capacities, different needs. Throw aside skepticism and all vainglory. Be of open heart and mind. Now. The great wheel ritual will begin. Though you will feel as if you are losing yourselves, do not worry. You will regain yourselves, feeling much richer in power. Now. Come and we will explore the pollen bath as we link our minds. Let us be quick. Your friend Roxon has been waiting. He has less than a half hour. I can tell you with assurance that he will not revive unless we can give him the power of all the shields. The medicine wheel must spin. Archer, pull yourself together. Steady your mind. Your friend needs you above all. This is not a matter of pride. There are no better and lesser shields. Besides, you are a great warrior. Your great gift is that you are in touch with the present, the here and now. This grounding is vital to Roxon. You will see and understand many things that will add to your shield. You will be the most necessary to help a friend. Do you understand?
Yeah, I will help Rock.
Now we spin the great medicine wheel.
They sat for a long time, cross-legged, staring at the center, at Roxon. Finally, Archer felt woozy. It wasn't the heat, though the sunlight coming into the dome from above was getting very hot. No, it was a strange beam of light caused by the sun rays coming through an opening at the top of the dome, striking Turquoise's mighty shield. The reflection from the shiny white elk shield shot into each of their minds. Archer, the others, felt light. They were floating off the sand floor, as a matter of fact. They seemed to rotate, and each of them felt a loss. A loss of more than weight, a loss of identity. Zydeco was shocked. He was Archer, and then he wasn't. He didn't know who he was in the Circle of 12. He decided he was a white elk being, the great Turquoise himself. But the power of his mind was so strong, he felt as if he would drown in it. Zydeco's shield across the way instantly received a bolt from Turquoise's all-powerful mind and changed to add the elk symbol. Then Zydeco's consciousness passed to the next body-soul matrix, and the next. For Archer, the experience was different. First of all, to feel light, being 410 pounds heavy, was a very odd sensation indeed. and so the flux of his ego loss came by surprise. He was released instantly from his rather defensive mental makeup. Years of holding himself inward and tight were now just gone. He didn't have to do that now. Archer, as the beam of light hit him from Turquoise's great shield, understood that he was no longer in need of hiding. He understood that he had been always trying to avoid being hurt, that he had a great fear of being made fun of. That defensiveness was a prideful thing, a thing that must be laid aside. A beam of light shot from Turquoise's great shield to Archer's shield. The mouse now shared the shield with an elk. Arrows turned out. Archer felt a shift of his very essence then, and his vision cleared. He was staring at himself from the other side of the dome. How could this be? His panic subsided when he realized he was now looking through the calm, clear eyes of the surgeon, and feeling and thinking like a surgeon. And then a beam of light shot from his shield, the surgeon's shield, toward Archer. Archer's shield now also contained a hawk. And Archer's consciousness again blurred, and he became Zydeco. And then he was another being, and another, and another. The surgeon looked down incredulously at his massive body, his tangled beard.
God, what was this? I'm actually Archer. No, think for a second. Hallucination has to be.
He squeezed his eyes shut, big, watery things, and opened them again. Still, he was Archer.
Turquoise said to just let it go.
Surgeon Escadrille remembered and tried. And then there was relief. It was all right to be Archer. Now he was himself again. The little body, so frail. He had never felt so frail until he had been Archer for a moment. The surgeon smiled and realized he still felt the strength of the great bear-like man he had been. So he looked at his shield and saw the change. Another pattern had been added to his hawk shield. Archer's inward-pointing arrows and green mouse. Escadrille understood a little more of his self-nature, and he had more feeling. Yes, that was the word. He was becoming whole, sharing all the directional powers. The process of interconnection, integration, continued. Each of them, in turn, exchanged something. Weakness for insight, compassion, strength. After a time, they were all done. Finally, they were ready to aid Roxxon.
Each of us has learned. Now we are ready. We will accomplish this thing. Resolve that we will give our power to Roxxon. Drag him out of that netherworld of half-dreaming, half-awakening. Resolve it and let us begin the struggle for his life. Let us do it now. Concentrate all your power upon his shield, so that he might reconnect to this world, so that he will have the power of life energy once more.
All were now linked in mind and heart. They all looked with even greater sadness at the prone, shallow breathing form of their friend Roxxon. His shield was dark and empty, like his life force. Just the great blank shield covered him. But being united, mind and heart, meant that they made up the whole. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Blue electricity filled the air like a great dynamo ready to start. Their power was awesome. Flashes of light as bright as the sun shot from everywhere and nowhere all around the dome. As they all concentrated their mental energies on Roxxon's body and a great blank shield over him, Rox's body started being bathed with light. Archer's beard was standing on end. The flashes of light intensified, ricocheting, pulsing faster and faster, becoming a vibrating kaleidoscope of swirling colors and shapes. Energy shot from each shield and flowed to Roxxon. The Doomsday Warrior's blank rawhide shield became full of moving colors and shapes. Beams of light shot out from the shield to Roxxon's body and back, which made the shield grow brighter still until there was an all-powerful interflow of energy from shield to Roxxon to the shield. The light around him grew in brightness until they rivaled the sun. Simultaneously, all assembled around the circle started to rise higher, still in a sitting position, hovering in the air. When they had risen approximately a foot off the ground, they started to spin slowly around Roxxon. Each mind link to Roxxon became clear, represented by a visual light spoke of the wheel. The wheel began to turn slowly and then faster and faster. It all spun around Roxxon. The whole assemblage and Roxxon became the spinning medicine wheel. The completion. The beginning. Suddenly, the colors and shapes on Roxxon's shield hardened and solidified into a beautiful mosaic. And then the mosaic resolved into Roxxon's personality. The brilliance faded, and a red wolf formed on the shield. The inward and outward pointing arrows became manifest. All participants fell over swooning in their places. The wheel had stopped. The energy had been transferred.
Where the hell? Turquoise. The glowers. Archer!
Roxxon! You're okay!
Yeah, I'm okay. Thank you, everybody.
Here, drink this.
Thank you.
It is good to see you return from the world of nothingness. Now rest. Sleep first. We will talk later. We all will rest.
Archer yawned and stretched and lay back where he was. He was the first awake, but soon all the techno-survivors arose too. They had slept the sleep of the exhausted on their beds of straw that the glowers had piled into one empty geodesic dome. Roxxon had snored as loudly as Archer, to the consternation of the little techno-survivors. The glowers, God knew how they did it, produced a large breakfast. There was the smell of bacon and fried eggs and toast. They ate heartily.
Perhaps the glowers can materialize food.
Yeah, perhaps. I never thought about anything except logic and science before. It's a startling revelation to me to experience this, other side of life. What would you call it, huh? What happened yesterday?
Spiritual? Metaphysical? Is that the term? No. I think a better word would be warrior power.
Yeah, that's it. I thought I knew it all, and I knew nothing. My understanding of life was so shallow.
You know now.
They were all rather quiet for the rest of their meal. The glowers sat communing with each other off to the side. The morning light shone through the cracks in the tent-like top of the lodge dome. It was a morning of beauty. The blue sky peeking in was shot with icy sky crystals, and a red sun glowed magnificently. The glower leader opened the door, letting in cold air just as they finished breakfast.
We must begin the journey back to Century City. This location is dangerous for humans after a short time.
When they came outside, Roxxon was shocked by what he saw. It had snowed several feet during the night. It was beautiful. The strange trees that surrounded the circular settlement had coatings of ice. The domes themselves were ice-coated, glowing blue from inside.
This is all so beautiful.
We can't sail the sand ships over snow, but there is yet another ship. It had been completed just before we felt the danger you were in, Roxxon. Come, we will show you our greatest physical achievement, our snow ship.
Will those other dimensional creatures attack us?
There will be no need for gunships. The interworld worms will not attack us. The beauty of snow travel is that with the snow, there are no beings such as that. Snow, being water, serves as a natural barrier to the netherworlds. All we need is just one craft. But come and see.
Roxxon, Archer, and Zydeco, and the other techno-survivors, all followed Turquoise Spectrum. Wherever the glower stepped, the snow instantly melted. It made a nice path for the humans. They came eventually to a great geodesic-shaped hangar, situated between two huge natural monuments of stone. The hangar was oval, elongated and large, perhaps 150 meters long by 100 meters wide. It was several stories high and glowed blue from the inside, like some huge cocoon. Shadows moved inside, cast against the eerie interior light. As the travelers gaped in awe, the unseen hinges moved and doors slid open, revealing the looming shape inside. It was the great snow ship, supported on large timbers. The 12-foot diameter stabilizer ball was spinning slightly under the center of the craft. A dozen glowers were prying the poles out from under the great craft. The rollerball spun faster and faster. Roxanne had learned that it was a sort of gyroscope that spun so fast that it reduced the craft's weight in the gravitational field of the planet. The ship above it stabilized and actually hovered above the concrete floor of the hangar dome. The great prow of the ship, a ship that seemed to be made of crystal ice, started to float slowly out the immense doors. It was like a Spanish galleon, but twice the size and immensely more beautiful than the sand ships.
Behold the snow ship. It rides high and fast. Zydeco tells me that his little people wish to accompany Roxanne and Archer to their home. This ice-carved vessel will take you all back to Century City with great speed.
The magnificent, impossible snowship slid its full 100-meter length out of the hangar. The back of it was shaped to hold rooms with lights coming out of the portholes.
Those are your comfortable quarters. The journey will perhaps be too interesting for many of you to wish to retire. But there are warm places and beds.
As Roxanne watched, the ship seemed to lower itself a bit, scattering up a spray of snow. The 12-foot rollerball spun slightly slower under the center of the craft. Once the craft had totally emerged from its hiding place, the crew on deck dropped the strange pink warm nets for all of them to scramble up. It would be quite a climb.
Come, let us get aboard.
It was a long climb, over 60 feet up to the deck. Roxanne climbed with confidence, though he felt his newly restored lungs burn and ache for oxygen. His arms got sore, and he started to get a little lightheaded, but he made it up. Rock watched the others climb aboard, and while the last of the nets were drawn up, the ship started up. Rock watched along with the others in his party as the great sails were slowly raised into place. First rose the canvas-like wind sail. Then the other iridescent, strange, thin fabrics made not for the wind, but for more subtle energies. The star energy sail was raised second, black and flickering with strange electrical flows. Finally, the powerful, yet most ethereal of all the sails, the one that would catch the power of the sun's very photons. Once the three sails were up and roped into place, the glower crewmaster went to the great wheel, which was like the wheel on an old sailing ship, and untied it. And then the ship, which seemed to be vibrating like an eager racehorse, began to slide forward out of the rocky area and out above the snow-swept terrain. They quickly gathered speed to about 30 knots, and in 5 minutes were sliding past the glower village, where the 24 glowers that remained behind lined up and silently waved goodbye. Once the ice crystal snow ship had left the glower's geodesic domes behind, a snowstorm began in earnest, and a leaden sky seemed to lower on them. But the snow swirled by even faster, the wind picking up, added to the power of the other sails. They were whipping along like a jet. Roxanne stayed in the bow section as the others wandered about the ship, studying its mechanism with enraptured attention. The technically minded little men were especially interested in how the glowers steered the thing. Rock stayed at the prow, and so did Archer. But as the ship rocked like a cradle, Archer soon bunked out on a blanket right next to Roxanne. The Doomsday Warrior was alone in his thoughts, standing in the very foremost part of the great craft, watching the terrain slide by. A winter wonderland. Further back on the craft, Rock knew the swirling snow thrown up by the great ship's passing would cloud the view. But up here, it was breathtaking. And more. Up here, there was a solitude that let him dream a bit of the alternate reality Kim that he had left behind on the non-existent asteroid named Esmeralda. And Kimetta's face seemed to float in front of the ship sometimes, smiling, encouraging, throwing kisses of icy gusts of snow from the other reality. He was both drawn to the vision and wary of it, wondering if it was dangerous to engage such thoughts. Though he knew it was impossible, he felt that if he let himself get lost in the thoughts again, he would drift back into that endless nightmare. He knew he felt solid, substantial, real, and tied to this time-space plane of existence. She would always be in his dreams, but Kimetta didn't belong here, or Roxanne there. he found himself supplanting her vision with the thought of her lovely counterpart in this reality, Kim Langford, the president's daughter. Rock smiled and watched the rolling snow dunes, and the ship silently glided along, leaning slightly this way and that as the great sails caught the various ethereal currents of energy it used to move. The snow dunes were really piling up. Occasionally, the craft rose or fell as it coasted over the drifting snow dunes, creating a rocking motion that calmed all humans aboard. The entire trip was utterly safe and pleasant. The journey seemed to Roxanne like a perfect time to rest and recuperate after all that had happened. The clouds broke slightly at sundown, and at twilight, Roxanne faced a bloodshot sky. Soon the sun display turned to vermilion, and then to black. Night descended. The broken clouds shot with starlight. The sails ripped and caught their gentle light and amplified it, used it. They picked up speed, coasting over the highest dunes and slowly falling back to the surface like a feather. Rock figured they were going about 70 knots.
Oh, come on, Archer, wake up. Exactly. Let's get to our real beds.
The techno-survivors had their own warmer cabin, but the two humans had an unused cargo space 20 steps down inside the hull for their rest. For a terrifying instant just before he went to sleep, Roxanne thought that he heard one of the other-dimensional invader worms roaring far out in the wilderness. But then he decided it was just his imagination, and the ship rocked him to sleep.
Oh, I needed that rest, Archer. How about you? Archer? What time is it?
Hello, Roxanne. Come on in and have a nice brunch with us.
The deck was bathed in sunlight. Archer was already sitting on a long plastic bench eating breakfast with the little people. The glowers were up on the rigging, or down in the depths of the ship, or at the great steering wheel, tending to their tasks. They didn't eat breakfast. Not this kind of breakfast. Rock sat down and gaped at the repast.
Wow, where'd they get this pile of scrambled eggs and toast and bacon?
Don't ask, just, look, I asked. It sort of spoiled my appetite.
Roxanne nodded and ate heartily. And then, as he and Archer made their way up to the prow of the craft, stretching and yawning, he had to ask.
All right, I've got to know. Where do the glowers get this food?
Reprocessed poop.
Thanks for the info.
He felt as green as Zydeco had looked for a while, but he thought about it. All nature is a series of reprocessing steps. Fertilizer feeds grass, and that's eaten by cows, which humans themselves eat. Anyway, if anybody could turn waste into food, it would be the glowers. He thought like that until his stomach stopped quaking. They continued their smooth, uneventful, beautiful journey toward Century City.
Hey, Archer, you see those cliffs over there? That's the Outer Buttes. 300 snowy miles to go. Man, I've never seen snow of this depth in Colorado. Hey, Archer, wait till the guys back home see this thing coming. The portal guards, especially old Grayson, will shit in their pants.
Well, they ain't no shoot, right?
No, they won't. I'll let Jarity and the other mutants in the city know that we're coming once we get within 10 miles.
Like glowers?
You got it, Arch.
He was, of course, referring to telepathic messages that Roxanne, a star mutant, would send to the three other trained star mutants in the city. Messages that would gently tip the city masters off to expect Roxanne to arrive soon, in a strange conveyance. Of course, the glowers could reach the three telepaths in Century Cities right from here, but Rock knew that their loud and strange mind links would upset the people at Century City. Instead, once the ship was closing in on the city's secret location, Roxanne would speak softly into their minds, while they slept, perhaps. And all would be well. Not that Century City's weapons could do much damage to this baby. As the sun rose higher and higher, and rivulets of melting snow began to form in the dunes below them, threatening early floods, they glided over the torn landscape at a speed that was now truly breathtaking. The Rocky Mountains came out of the mists, looking like white monuments, half covering the sky. Roxon, upon seeing Carson Mountain gleaming in the sunlight, felt a tugging at his heart that every member of Century City's population did upon seeing home after a long journey.
Hey, I see them! They're coming!
Looks like they got my message. It's quite the crowd down there.
There is something your council needs to know, Roxon.
Is it serious?
It would be best if everybody heard.
All right, then. I'll call for you to come when I've warned people not to touch you. People probably won't listen to what you have to say if you start the meeting by killing a couple of people.
No, I suppose not.
The ship coasted to a halt, and the netting was thrown overboard. Roxon, Archer, and the techno survivors all climbed down to the welcoming crowd, excited to see their hero alive and okay after so long.
Roxon! Oh, I've missed you so much.
Rona, it's good to see you too.
And later tonight, I'm going to show you just how much I've missed you.
Oh, I bet you... Whoa!
Suddenly, Roxon was lifted up in the air. Then the Doomsday Warrior, and with some greater difficulty, Archer, was carried aloft back to the city in triumph. After an impromptu party, Rock had herded everybody into the Century City Council Chamber.
Hello, everybody. It's really great to be back home. My life was saved once again by the benevolence of the Glowers. Their leader, Turquoise Spectrum, has told me that he has something very important to tell us all. When he comes in, do not get near him. Though he means no harm, he is very different from all of us. If anybody were to touch him, they would die. Now that that's out of the way, I open the floor to Turquoise Spectrum. Turquoise, they're ready for you.
Very well.
Then suddenly the Glower appeared next to Rock in the podium. Rock had no idea they could do such things, and the crowd didn't really know how to react to this. The Glower leader was imposing. People were uneasy and restive, curious perhaps, but not awed. More afraid and confused, until he began speaking directly into each mind.
People of Century City, I speak to you on a grave matter of concern to all. The greatest enemy of life forms on this planet, a man whom you all believe to be dead, is not dead. I speak of Kilov, Master of Death. He has survived the tidal wave unleashed by your brave fighters, and is gathering strength even now. Soon will come a challenge to the very survival of the entire world. We Glowers will try and help you meet this challenge, but we will not be able to join the fight itself. Only one being is capable of challenging the force of darkness, and that is Roxon. Destiny has chosen him for this task. Pray that he is up to it. I hear many questions in your minds. There is not time for questions. This is all I have to say, all I can say on this matter. Now I shall leave.
Thus ended the first address of an alien being to the council. Just Roxon and Zydeco and Archer walked the Glower leader up to the green-lit ramp to the western entrance to the city. As they walked outside to the twilight sky, Turquoise took off the shoulder pack he carried, full of supplies he had asked for at Century City, and set it down. He opened it up and lifted out a set of wire coat hangers and a box of aluminum foil. He held them forth to Roxon.
This is my gift to you. Take it. I cannot state this too strongly. Never be without these nearby.
Thank you, but...
You will have need of these things, Roxon. Never be without them.
Roxon examined the object. One hand held a few dozen wire coat hangers, the kind that come back from the dry cleaners in B section of Century City. The Century City brand aluminum foil was unopened.
I don't quite understand. Why should I need...
When you need them, you will understand.
He turned slightly and gauged the breeze coming in the open doorway.
The weather is warming. I must leave you now, friends. My ship must reach home before the snows are utterly gone, else the other dimensional worms are a threat to the unarmed ship. Goodbye, friends. Good luck, as you say.
Turquoise turned, strode into the entranceway winds, and stood there. and then he turned, silhouette in the first glimmer of stars, and raised his right hand palm so that it was facing them. Out of that upraised palm came a blue glow, a swirling spiral pattern.
Goodbye and eternal farewell, Roxanne. Zydeco, Archer, this planet will never see our meeting again.
The swirling pattern in his hand shot forth, then divided into three rays that shot outward from the palm toward each of the humans. When the ray hit Roxanne, a gentle, soft pleasure spread in his mind, like menthol hitting a sore throat. It faded slowly, and when Roxanne's vision cleared, Turquoise was gone. The ship had already set sail, already down the slope had across the half mile of snow between the mountain and his ice crystal ship. As the ship faded from sight in the vast loneliness, Roxanne and his friends turned and walked back down the ramp toward the lights and sounds of Century City, Roxanne carrying his bizarre gifts. Roxanne was especially quiet for the rest of the night and retired to his room to stare at the ceiling.
I have to save the world. I'm getting too old for this. And that Kilov just won't die. He must be the devil himself to have survived the tidal wave I unleashed on him in Africa. Come in!
The door opened and Rona walked in, wearing just the briefest of negligees. The tall, brassy, red-headed goddess walked towards Rock, hunger in her eyes.
Rona, I...
Shut up and do me.
Doomsday Warrior. American Dream Machine. Adapted by Dan Smith. Directed by Johan Detweiler. Dialogue editing and sound design by Johan Detweiler. Narrated by James Konacek. With performances by David Coyne, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Kate Torre, Karen Carbone, Mort Shelby, Lily Beacon, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, Terrence Aselford, Johan Detweiler, Eric Messner, and Chris Rowan. Featuring music by Chris Rowan and Dan Smith. Doomsday Warrior is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1990, Ryder Sievertson. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Doomsday Warrior, be sure to look for Jerry Ahern's The Survivalist and James Axler's Deathlands. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Available now from Graphic Audio. When Preacher attends the annual mountain rendezvous, he encounters more than the usual trappers, fur traders, and grizzled mountain men.
Preacher, this here is Miss Faith Carling.
Are you a minister, then? A man of God? A purveyor of the gospel?
No, ma'am. I'm just a fur trapper like all these other fellows at the rendezvous.
I'm Willard Carling, Mr. Preacher. I'm a painter.
I'm pleased to meet you. But it's just Preacher, no mister. I reckon you came out here to paint all this?
Yes, and the savages, too. Oh, and this gentleman, Jasper Hodge, he's a journalist, you know. Plans to write a book about this expedition, as well as stories for his newspaper.
That a fact?
If you'd like, I can put you in the book, Preacher. Wouldn't it be something for your friends to read about you in such a volume?
Yeah, it sure as hell would, considering most of them can't read a lick.
Chester Sinclair. I'm Mr. Carling's assistant.
Howdy.
I have to have someone lug all my paints and canvases about, you know? And for that, I need a big strapping mule like this lad here.
Chester may be big, but he's obviously not any more courageous than you two.
These are the folks you've hired on with for the summer rip?
What Preacher doesn't know is he'll be spending the summer for this oddball crew himself. And it definitely won't be a vacation.
Now we see what your brave words amount to, Preacher.
Nothing! You are my prisoner! Soon my people will see you die!
I will enjoy peeling the hide off of you, one agonizing strip at a time.
You gonna fight or try to talk me to death? You lose any men?
Unfortunately, yes. These are all the troops that remain in my command.
This is all of you, huh? Well, hell, that's convenient. All right, boys. Now! You gotta hang back now, out of sight, until night falls again and they make camp.
And then what?
Then Rip and me will slip in there and kill all those bastards.
Just like that?
Just like that.
Don't miss the first Mountain Man 13, Preacher's Quest.
In a remote corner of untamed Northern California, a man who is Frank Morgan's exact look-alike has been terrorizing the local population.
You got a problem with me, mister?
I knew it. You're gonna kill me, ain't you, Val?
Who the hell is Val?
You is.
My name is Frank, not Val.
Says you. I know who you is. Val Dooley is wanted, dead or alive, and you is a spitting image of Val.
If this Dooley person is so famous, how come I never heard of him?
He ain't been outlawing long, but in a few months he's been rampaging and a-raping and a-killing and a-stealing to beat the band. And that ain't all he's been doing.
Well, what else has he been doing?
Lifting the dress tails of a lot of good women. He's a mighty handsome man. Women get all flighty and stupid around you. Him. You sure you ain't Val Dooley?
I'm sure.
I guess you ain't. But if you want some good advice, you'll get back on your horse and head east. Get the hell out of this part of California, because if you stick around here, you're gonna be a sure enough dead man.
And when the townspeople get their hands on Frank, a hangman's rope is sure to follow.
Steady now.
You got your nerve, Val!
Somebody shoot that murderer!
Get him! Don't let him get away!
You scum, we got you now!
Go, Wolf, go! What the hell's the matter with you people?
Somebody get a rope!
Yeah, hang that murdering bastard!
If Frank is going to be taken for an outlaw, then the last gunfighter is going to act like one.
Don't kill me, Morgan!
Oh, I'm not gonna kill you. We're gonna have a nice long talk, you and me.
Huh? What are we gonna talk about?
You're gonna tell me everything about Val Dooley.
What are you doing with that fire, Morgan? What the hell are you gonna do with that, Morgan?
I told you, Danny, we're gonna have a long talk.
You ain't gonna burn me, Morgan. You're a lawman. You can't do nothing like that. It ain't legal.
Neither is kidnapping and rape, Danny.
I don't know nothing, Morgan. I swear to you I don't.
You're a liar, Danny. You better talk to me, and you better start right now.
I won't! Ah!
The Last Gunfighter, number 6, Imposter. Coming soon. From Graphic Audio.
Justice League of America, The Flash, stop motion.
All the victims experienced massive head trauma, and their brains appear to have been exploded from the inside out by something that can either exist in multiple locations at once or is moving at super speed.
It's fast.
What is this thing you're dealing with that shaves off a man's skull?
I don't think it's human.
He's done it, hasn't he?
I was using human DNA. I expected a human result.
It is harvesting. It is following its first imperative.
You guessed right, Wally. All the victims tested positive for the metagene. All of them were potential superheroes.
It will keep looking and killing until it finds the donor who provided the DNA that was its root stock.
In fact, it's faster than me.
Copyright 2008 DC Comics. Justice League of America, The Flash, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. 2008 DC Comics. All rights reserved.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.